the Light a Candle podcast.
Welcome to the OA Light a Candle meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find links to prior podcasts from this meeting available in multiple formats. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Corey. Yay.
Thank you, Michelle. Get all set up here. I'm Corey. I'm a compulsive overeater and a restrictor. Oh, it's nice to be here. I looked at the time. I was like, ooh, that's a lot of time. And then I remembered about the questions. Let me circulate some pictures. You could pass those. Wow, it's great to be here. Thank you, Seppi, for asking me to come and lead. This program has changed my life, and I don't say that lightly. So I came in. Let me get some numbers out of the way, and then I'll find a path. I came into OA in 1989. I got here. I always say my first OA spiritual experience was that I mentioned to someone in Al-Anon that I was struggling with my food, because I didn't talk about my food with anybody. I was in college. I lived in the dorms. Nobody knew that I was doing the kind of eating that I was doing. I hid it very well. I learned to hide as a kid. I'm also a type 1 diabetic, and I learned to hide because everyone made comments on my food. And, you know, probably a lot of us have that same experience, especially people who carried extra weight. Should you be eating that or whatever? But I got a lot of that, and so I just learned to hide, and I learned, and what I was doing was really damaging to my body, and I wasn't regulating my blood sugars, and I, for a while, I can say I didn't really care. Then the point came, which is where the bottom that got me here, which was where I began to care, but I realized I wasn't able to do anything about it. And that intersection for me, and maybe for a lot of us, is why I needed this program versus any of the Pay and Way programs. Because I knew what to eat from the time I was 9 when I was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. I knew, my mom was always on Weight Watchers, and I was given by many nutritionists food plans, and I couldn't follow them, because I'm a compulsive overeater and it's a spiritual malady. And so I was 23 when I got here. I was 22 when I got to Al-Anon, and I got here. It took me a long time, and maybe you guys can learn from my mistakes. And welcome, by the way, and happy 90 days. It took me a long time to realize that working the program wasn't just coming to meetings. And going out to breakfast afterwards. That was a fun part. But and the social part, that's a very fun part. Meetings are an absolute tool, but they're not the only tool. And so it took me a while to learn that. And I started working the steps right away because I had a sponsor and I didn't know what else to talk about with her. So I was like, why don't we work the steps? And I was living in a really little town. There wasn't a lot of collective recovery, but I started working the steps, and it's interesting because I was talking to someone today who's pretty new. She's been around for 3 months, and her sponsor doesn't think she's yet at step one. And I said, I worked the steps a bunch of times before I really got step one, because she was beating herself up, like, I should have it by now. It's been 3 months. And I was like, no. Some days I still forget that I'm powerless, or I still forget that my life is unmanageable by me, and that I need steps 2 and 3 and, the higher power stuff. Anyway, I know I have a lot of time, but I always forget to get to the, like, what does my program look like now? So I'm going to work backwards. So here's what I do today. I'm in a meeting every day. On Sundays, I'm in 2. They're early in the morning. If you need a good 6 a.m. meeting, they're The most of the ones I go to are out of the Footsteps Inner Group. My Sunday morning one at 6 a.m. is out of New York, and my 9 a.m. one is out of here, but they're all virtual. So it's a little weird here when you know, you all stepped up and people actually said hi, you know, because I'm so used to having my cat in my lap and just sort of no one responds or you don't hear or whatever. So I'm in a meeting every day. I sponsor three people. I make outreach calls. I don't like making outreach calls. For a long time, I listened and to myself and didn't make outreach calls. And my program got deeper when I started making outreach calls. In the beginning, I would call you when I was struggling. What I've learned in the last little while, and I've been around a long time, you guys heard the date. What I've learned is that my program deepens when I call you to see how you're doing. Not that it's not okay to call when I'm struggling, because I do. But I usually call my inner circle people when I'm struggling. I don't call sort of random strangers. But in my morning meetings, if there's somebody new, I'll call them. Or especially if I have experience, strength, and hope with things that they may have shared. But like someone was a type 1 diabetic one of the meetings this week. And so that sort of stuff, I reach out to those people. But you know, especially when you're new, people, you might not have the courage to call us. So we call you sometimes. And you don't even have to stay on the phone long. I don't mean to scare you, those of you that are new. You can just say, hi, I'm doing okay. Nice to see you. Thanks for the call. Write down our number in case you ever need us. You know, that sort of stuff. So I do that. I try and work all the tools every day. Those were a couple that I just mentioned. I work anonymity always. That's one of our tools. But I try and work all the tools every day, particularly when I'm struggling. And these days, my struggles aren't a lot with food. It's rare that I have struggles with food. Although this week I had cravings kick up and I texted someone and said, my cravings are up. Here's what I want to do. Here's what I'm not going to do. I'm going to loop God in, you know, and I use the term God as a shortcut for higher power, whatever. It can be whatever you want. That's the cool thing about the program. I work this program with every cell of my body. I have to, because otherwise it'll work me. And I work the program rather than working my food, by the way. I mean, I do have general guidelines for my food, what I do and don't eat. There's nothing that I absolutely don't eat no matter what. There are things that I avoid for the most part. Gluten and dairy are the two big ones. I was at a friend's house the other day. She offered to make me lunch and we went for a walk and we came back and she said, I made tuna fish sandwiches and you can have sprouted grain bread or whatever bread, whatever the other, on a bagel. And so I chose the lesser of two evils. And then I went back to my gluten-free ways of living, and that's just been my experience. So that's a little bit about, I always get to that part, like the last 1 minute, and then I'm like, oh, and then I do this, and then I just, you guys have to know, call me, I'll tell you the rest of the story. So those are some of the things that I do. So when I'm in meetings, when I hear something that I really like, or if I'm listening to a podcast, I write it down. And because I'm only doing virtual meetings now, I have a Word doc on my computer. And so I brought my list. I have 20 pages of really cool things that I've heard in meetings that I write down because I forget stuff. And so there's some really cool stuff. This works because we're not all crazy on the same day. Right? So it's okay to be crazy. Just, you know, someone said I'm like a big basket of hurts. I used to pray that God be with me, but now I know that God is always with me, so I pray to remember that God is with me. Just stuff like that, like little things. You know, you hear stuff, and you're like, my God, I loved what you said. So I write it down. And sometimes I write down who said it if I can remember, and I'm getting old, so I don't always remember. But so that's another thing that I do. So let me go back to the beginning. When I got here, I was both restricting and compulsive overeating. My doctor gave me, I was on insulin shots at the time, and I was taking a boatload of insulin to cover all the binges that I was doing. And when I started restricting, I started passing out and winding up in emergency rooms. And we all have our version of bottoms, and that was And I was doing some very severe damage to my body. And I had a doctor that got mad at me, which is I don't have any more. I don't have people in my life that abuse me today. That's another thing that I do every day, is I don't have people that abuse me. But and so I was going to Al-Anon meetings. I wasn't really working the Al-Anon program yet. I didn't really know what working a program meant. But I went there, and I liked what other people said. And one day, I can't even imagine the me that said this. I mentioned to someone that I was having a hard time with food. I don't know how I said it. I'm assuming it was English because that's the only language that I know. But other than some dialectical French, if you know what I mean, that I'm not allowed to say on the podcast, but thank you, Michelle. But I said it, and she said, oh, I go to OA. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, no, I don't need OA. I just need to figure out my food. That's what I thought, right? That's what we think. We just need to figure out our food. So I tried for a while. Let me try this. Like it says in the big book, I'm not going to drink alone, or I will only drink on Tuesdays, or I'll only eat, you know, this, or I'll starve all day and then eat at night, or whatever my version of that was at the time. And it took a couple of weeks of my continuing to talk to her and her saying, you know, look, there's a seat there for you if you want it. Why don't you come see what it's about? And then you don't ever have to come back again. And that was the most beautiful thing anyone could ever say to me. We will not take you hostage. That's what I heard. So I went and I loved it from the moment I got there. I loved it. Someone said that they ate a bunch of food, threw the rest of the package away, went in the other room, came back, ate the package out of the trash, you know. And I was like, wow, I never thought I would tell anybody that I did that. And then there are other things that I've done with food that I've not heard in meetings, but like when I was 9, after I was diagnosed as a diabetic, there was a donut on the playground at school. It was on the ground. I had gone to the restroom during class and I ate the donut. And for years I had shame. No, who does this? Well, you all do your own version of that. Like, welcome, you know. And I found I don't have secrets about my food today. I don't. And I sponsorship. So another thing that I do every day. I have a co-sponsor right now. We're working the steps together. And it's working for me. I wasn't sure that it would work for me. I thought I needed a sponsor who was like my mentor. We're kind of each other's mentors, but it's working really well. I lost my train of thought, as a kid, food is language of love in my family. That's our love language, or it was, food. And it's a part of every ritual in my religion of origin. It's what we do, except the day that we fast, but then we have a big break fast, and I never fasted because I was a type 1 diabetic, but I did break the fast. I break your fast with my eating. And I learned food. Like I just loved food. It was when I was diagnosed as a diabetic that switch got flipped for me. Before that I could take it or leave it. I was a scrawny kid, whatever. And something about the getting diagnosed as a diabetic, things that were happening in my family. And that's not why I'm a compulsive overeater. That's why I ate. But the fact that I have a disease, I think there's genetics to that. There's stuff I don't really understand. I'm kind of grateful that I have a disease because I love this program and I love that it's a spiritual malady. I guess I could have said I was sort of a spiritual person before the program. I mean, I liked cool sayings and I liked things that, you know, had meaning and the meaning of life and all that stuff. But I love... So right now, I just finished working the steps again. That's another thing that I do. I am always in the steps. Whether I'm actually working 1 through 12 or I'm doing my nightly 10 steps, that's another thing I do every day. I do a 10 step every night. I didn't always do that. I've been doing that for the last probably 2 years. My co-sponsor and I, as we worked through the steps, when we got to the 10 step, we found a format that worked for us. And it has questions like, do I owe an amends today? What have I done for myself? What have I done for others? Did I exercise today? Did I follow my plan of action? Was I abstinent today? and more. Gratitudes, something I'm grateful for in myself today. And I do that, I want to say, every night but two, I think. And one of those I did in the morning, and one I completely forgot. So the next night I was like, oh, I forgot last night, here's today's. But it's, so I'm always in the steps. I'm a huge believer of the steps. I'm really grateful that when I was new in program, I had the kind of sponsors, and there's no judgment if you sponsor or you're sponsored in another way. Not that you care if I have judgment about you anyway, but if you do, good thing you have a sponsor, because, but I'm seriously not judging anybody that does it differently, but I'm really grateful that nobody said to me, you have to be abstinent before you can work the steps. Because my experience was, I got abstinent by working the steps, that I had to get rid of some wreckage before I could struggle, you know, before I could stop struggling with. And my first few years, I know I'm all over the place. And usually I say that and I'm not, but today I'm all over the place. So wait, let me just take a minute and get grounded. So I told you my childhood, food was a big deal. I come from a lot of trauma, as many of us do. That's, again, not why I eat, but it's a part of my story. And thank God for food. Thank God that I had food during those times. Thank God. There was a lot of rage. There was a lot of abuse of lots of different kinds in my family. I took a writing class, and in one of the classes, the teacher just would interview us with questions, and she asked me questions, and she said, so tell me about your story. And I said, well, I was the daughter who wasn't molested. And she said, there's a story there. And that's the story, is I was the daughter that wasn't molested. So that gives you more information. Few of us are in program. More of us could use programs. Part of the reason that I'm working the steps again, and my co-sponsor and I are both in Al-Anon and OA, is because I was spending a lot of time thinking about what programs my brother should be in. And I could give you a list. But that was not only is that none of my business, but it's also, there was no sanity in that for me. Because his life is a mess to me. I don't know if it's a mess to him on the inside. It seems like it is, but it's really, again, not my business. So childhood was a mess. My mother, we would eat together sometimes. She would eat and like do things like, oh, it's my birthday, let's go for ice cream for dinner. Things like that. It's good for diabetics. So I started lying about my food very early on. And my doctor would say, are you cheating? Which is like the most shaming way you can say, like, it would be nice if doctors, at least back then, had a little more understanding. I think doctors do now. I work with some of them professionally, and a lot of them have a little more understanding of eating disorders, or at least disordered eating. But anyway, I was lying about my food. I ate large quantities of food. I'm surprised that I didn't kill myself. Through food. I'm not a like actively suicidal person, but a good passive suicide in my story felt like that could possibly happen. And I don't say that. I don't mean to make light of that. And a lot of you know my story, and you know I definitely don't mean to make light of that. And I abused food almost every which way, except I was never able to vomit. I tried. I thought it sounded brilliant. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, then I can just eat, you know. But I was, as a kid, I was the one that just ate and ate and ate till I was so full. And then I would grieve that there was no more room to eat more. And the second there was more room, then I would eat something else. I couldn't vomit, so I didn't have that out. I wasn't at all interested in exercise, so I didn't have that out. I started manipulating my insulin, which is called diabulimia. It's a relatively new term in the last 10 years. And it's diabetics using diabetic tools to be bulimic. It's really about accountability. I didn't want to have my body show what I was eating because I didn't want you to know. And I was getting bigger and bigger, and insulin puts weight on anyway. And the bigger I got, the bigger my clothes got. And you'll see in those pictures, there's some big pictures. There's also, you know, I also was, I've been a 16 and I've been a size 2. And Now I'm closer to a 2, but I'm not a 2. I have no business being a size 2. And that was in program that I got to be a size 2. And then at some point I started realizing that I was massively under eating. And anyway, that's a whole, it's part of the story, but it's not as important as, so when I got here, like I said, I wanted to start working the steps right away. I wanted to get a sponsor because that seemed like a cool thing to do. I thought she would be like a therapist. Not so much. So, but that took me some time to learn. And I think it was my third sponsor who taught me that she wasn't my therapist. She wasn't my higher power. And she didn't just come out and say that. That would have been easier and a little less painful. But I called her one time and she wasn't available and I was really upset. And she's like, sweetie, you need to call other people. You need to build your posse because I'm a tool for you, but I'm not the program. And I love that she was so clear about it. At the time I was like, oh, I'm so wounded. But it was clear. It was like, she was clear. Here's where I end. Here's where you end. And somewhere in there, you need to have people that you can call when I'm not available. So here's where I was going to go earlier when I lost my train of thought. When I first came in, I didn't understand abstinence. We didn't have the tool of food plan yet. It was just, the tool was abstinence. And at some point, and I'm guessing they took abstinence and elevated it more like sobriety is in the beverage program, and the tool became food plan, which I think makes sense to me. For me, food plan is what I eat, abstinence is what I don't eat, or the behaviors that I don't do. I didn't understand. I didn't ask anybody because my style was not to ask you and have you know that I don't yet know. Because it was like I had a lot of pride, but I had a lot of like quiet, shameful, like I'll hide in the corner kind of pride, which is no less painful or no less prideful. But I thought at first, because I knew what diets were and I knew what food plans were from all the dietitians and all the yelling that my doctor had done to me, I thought, okay, an abstinence has to look like that. So I came up with something that I thought was going to be perfect. And my sponsor was like, okay. I mean, she didn't say to me, is that doable? Until I felt like I broke it. And I called her and I said, I've broken my abstinence. I need to start over. And she said to me, okay, what'd you do? And I said, well, I went to a Halloween party, ate a piece of candy. And then I realized that wasn't what I want to be doing. And I thought, I need to call you. And I went home and I called you. And she said, now some people, for them, that would be a break. For me, she said to me, and it was very helpful. She said, okay, so hold on. How did you used to eat? And I said, oh, that bag would have been gone. And the next one, and the truck it came in on, and the trunk of your car is if you're the refreshment person, and the nearest, CVS. And she said, and you had one piece, you realized what you did, you took a pause, which is big for someone who has like a month, and you went home and called me. She said, first of all, don't start your abstinence over until you discuss it with me, which I also loved. Because in my head, I would have started over every other day, which was more, it's sort of arrogance, but in the flip side of the coin of arrogance. And she said, and you might want to think about how hypervigilant you're being about your abstinence. Now, some people need it to be that black and white. For me, there was a relief, and I continued on. And that wasn't my, I don't count my date from back then, because there were a lot of other things. And I count my date after a very difficult, probably month of like really serious eating. And I was, I had moved in with a roommate that I had a big feelings for. And I was sure that I was gonna change her, right? Al-Anon, but I know we're in OA. But, and she was a practicing bulimic. And I moved in with her to save her because she was really cute. Because she told me she loved me, yada, yada, yada. And I found intimacy with her by eating with her because she wasn't abstinent. So I guess I wasn't done. I mean, I don't know. I guess I wasn't done. So I finally realized I needed to move out of that roommate situation, and I wanted to get abstinent. And that was one of the more painful times for me in program, because I wanted to get abstinent, and I... and I didn't have it back yet. I think that there's an element of my action in order to be abstinent. I also think that there's an element of there's this spiritual reprieve where my higher power lifts the cravings. And I'm very clear on what those differences are. But back then, I didn't quite get it. So every day I would wake up and I would say, today's going to be day one. Tomorrow's going to be day two. By Christmas, I'm going to have X number of days. Then I'll take a candle next year and everyone will see how great I am. And I see where this is going. Because we're not all crazy on the same day. But those, that month. Anyway, I finally, I got abstinent again. What I did was I jumped into service. So it was very close to the OA birthday party. And if anyone doesn't know what that is, it's our annual convention. Back then, every year we did a play on Friday night. And it was some version of some musical that really existed in the world. And we would adapt it for OA. And I did tech the first year. And I did, I helped the sound person. And I did props. And I just got busy. And I was just busy. And I could say I was too busy to eat, but I think what was happening was I was hanging around with all of you and I was in program circles and I was going to meetings and I was knowing people in meetings because I was doing all of this service that the food, like I was gifted abstinence. And I heard once, and it's on my list somewhere, that it was something like, we don't get ourselves abstinent, but we have to find a way to keep it. And that's all, for me, the way I took that was, you know, I was you could say I was struck abstinent, and I just kept on being busy. And for the first number of years without abstinence, I went to a lot of meetings. I probably went to, I don't know, 12 meetings a week. I went to lunchtime meetings and nighttime meetings, and on my days off, I would go to morning meetings. And I had a lot of time, and I was single and didn't have nieces and nephews and kitties, so I had more time. But I just got busy. So that's probably my number one. When newcomers call me and say, what do I do? I get busy, get in the middle of the herd, we say. Like, they, you know, in the wild, it's the animals on the outside, like the whatever they are that are picked off by the coyotes or the bears or whatever. You know, see how much camping I do. But but so, and like here, it could be very easy if I were on the periphery to just sort of slink away, just go to a few fewer meetings, right? And so I have, and particularly since the pandemic, when I'm on meetings at 6 a.m. every day, and a lot of them are with back east people where they get to sleep in a little bit later. I'm a morning person. I'm up at 5 a.m. I retired in May of 2021, and I got up at 5 a.m. for work, and I just kept that ritual because I love those meetings and I love that community, and I get to do it in my jammies, and I have my coffee and, you know, whatever. So, and if I have to go to work after because I work part-time now, I shower first, and then I jump on. Like, I have all these rituals, right? I'm just busy, and program is, I don't know if it's the center of my life, but it's part of the nucleus of my life, and that's just my experience. Okay. So, what else can I tell you? So I didn't wind up changing that woman's life and making her gay and making her fall in love with me, and thank God. Because I don't know if she'll hear this, but I'm hoping that she found recovery like I did. But it, you know, that's one of the things. So part of, for me, why I'm loving that I'm working with a co-sponsor who's doing Al-Anon and OA, is because we're doing the steps. There's a workbook. It's an Al-Anon workbook, so I won't mention the name. But if you want to know, you can call me or come up after. But it's got questions on the steps, which we finished. The traditions, which we're almost done with. I'm giving away tradition 12 in a couple of weeks. I want to be one of those people that if you mention a step, I will tell you what to do in that step because I just know them. But I don't know the tradition so well. I know the seventh because we say that at every meeting. And I even know how to talk about the seventh tradition, not related to money. But anyway, so in this workbook, then it also has the concepts of service, which I don't know very much about other than I listen to a ton of podcasts and I listen to a couple of AA podcasts with a woman who knows the concepts of service like the back of her hand. I'm not an alcoholic, but I love AA podcasts because there's a desperation that I can forget that I have with food in the things that they did with alcohol, drugs, whatever. And there's a depth to some of the recovery there. I find it here too, but there's just the, I think the desperation and the bottoms and some of the things that people have gone through. So I'll just say a couple more things and then I want to open up for questions. You know, we say life on life's terms, right? And life happens. And a lot of you know I lost my dad to suicide in 2010. There's circumstances beyond that that, you know, he took his wife with him, if you know what that means. The first thing I thought was, how the hell am I going to get through this? And my second thought was, I'm going to do this one day at a time. Because all of those platitudes that I thought were so stupid in the beginning, they came to me before anything else came to me. I'm going to do this one day at a time. I can do anything for 24 hours. That would appall me if I had to keep it up for a lifetime. That's more of an Al-Anon thing, but I think we sometimes read those here. Right? And I've been through, and then my brother became suicidal. He didn't kill himself, but he became suicidal after that because he had a different relationship with that ending than I did. And I went to program and he went to despair. And, you know, he didn't have us. He had me. I mean, it's nice. And I'm always saying platitudes to him, even though I hated them in the beginning. I'm hoping one day he'll go, where did you hear that? You know, or go, yes, okay, I agree, I'll go, or whatever. But not my business, but that gets confusing sometimes, if you know what I mean. So, I'm in the middle of the herd in lots of ways these days. When someone asks me to do service, unless it's a work conflict, or like some other conflict of something that I've already committed to, I am there. When Seppi called me, I was like, yeah, she gave me some dates. I said, I'll do this one. It wasn't like can I do it or can I not do it? It was like, let's find something that works because that's what works for me. So let's see. I don't think, anyway, there's so much more I could say. The pitch in the shower this morning was a little more refined than this. I'm kidding. I don't do that so much anymore. But one more thing I just want to share with you that's on my list is, because I thought this was so brilliant, and I don't even know who said it, because someone quoted someone else, 10 minutes, perfect, was that if my only tool is food, every problem will look like hunger. So, thank you. And I realize it could have been one of you that said it, because I have no idea the origin of that, but I just thought it was brilliant. So, questions? Rod.
Thank you so much, Corey. It was really good to hear you. I know a little bit more about you than just what you've spoken about, and I'm curious about the way you observe step six and identifying character defects. When you're sponsoring, do you name them for your sponsee? When you go through the steps, when you've gone through the steps, do you define them yourself or have your sponsor define them? I'm just looking for your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And
So the question was about step six. And who identifies the character defects? Does the sponsor, right? Or does the sponsee?
But, or what?
Or what, yeah. So in my experience, kind of both. I've not had sponsors that, after my four steps, said, here's a list of your character defects. But I've done some of that for my sponsees. I don't give them a formal list. But I do, as I'm listening, I will say things like, this is a theme for you, and I think there's a character defect under that. If you want some help figuring out what that is, I'm happy to help you. Sometimes I see it directly. Sometimes I'll say, my sponsees, so I've sponsored someone, my longest is about 18 years, and she knows, and she's like good with it now. Some of the newer ones, not so much, that I'll say, I think I hear some ego in that, and she'll go, oh, yeah. So it's both. When she did her first, fourth, and fifth with me, I asked her to come up, and she's in another program where a sponsor gave her a list. And I said, okay, so now look back through your four step and come up with a list of character defects. And she said, you're not going to give me a list? And I said, no, but if I hear themes and you've missed a few, I might join you in that chorus. But so I think it's a bit of both. And I don't just sponsor people through 1 through 12 and then move on. I sponsor them like 18 years. So I know that person a lot, and I really have a sense of their character defects. And also in that, by the way, I learned my own character defects. And I discovered a new one this week that was a little disheartening. I was like, oh, gosh darn it. All right. But freeing at the same time. More freeing than disheartening. But yeah, great question. Thank you. 1, 2.
I'm Mallory Bulimic. As far as the shame piece, or not so much the shame piece, but like the things when people would say to you, oh, maybe you shouldn't eat that, whatever, but all of that hurt and kind of trauma, how did you get over that?
So how did I get over the hurt and trauma?
Your piece of from having this disease and not being able to control yourself. Like, right. How did you get over others and the trauma that they imposed on you?
Right, and their comments on my food.
Yeah.
That's a great question. I mean, I think the steps really helped with that. Writing an inventory and the way I did it with the columns, I resent. And in the big book, I tell my sponsees this too, they get very petty. Like, I resent Mrs. So-and-so, she snubbed me. Like, okay. I would think you should have some bigger kahuna ones than that, but like, no, like we get really petty. And so I was able to list all that. And then I also was able, as an adult, I was able to see it like, oh, I went to my, grandmother who commented on my weight all the time and said, oh, do you like this dress? And I've lost a little, and then that's like sort of that's the my part column, right? Which I've heard is kind of misnamed, by the way, that it's not my part makes it sound like I get to choose your part too, but it's like, this is my stuff. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I just work the steps. I also, shame comes up still for me. And I used to think I need to get over this shame. And I think for me, I just, I reach out to others. I work the steps. It's in my 10 step if it comes up. And shame just takes time sometimes for it to pass for me. So yeah, good question though.
I am a compulsive overeater and restrictor. Thank you so much for your share. I'm new to the program, and just someone with like binge eating and restriction. Like I, have had anorexia and like a binge eating disorder. So it's kind of like the abstinence part is kind of a gray area for me because the 3 meals a day and 2 snacks and the absence from certain foods, like it goes into like my triggers my like restrictive brain to where like I become like a little like obsessed. Like, how do you kind of manage that line? And like, do you think there's a part of abstinence that is kind of intuitive?
That's a good question. I was talking with someone before. So the question was, how do you, when you have multiple sides of the disease, how do you manage that? And when working one side of abstinence kicks up another side of the disease, how do you, so let me think. That's a really, it feels like a really important, powerful question. I mean, I want to say, like, I don't know that I work my food, I work my program. Mm-hmm. And I'm, I'm not limited to 3 meals a day and 2 snacks, although that's generally what I do. Sometimes it's only 1 snack. But, I mean, I think the good news is that with the 12-step programs, I don't remove my own obsession or my own, when something gets kicked up. That's why, I call my sponsor or a fellow. I work the steps on it. And I find that it gets lifted. It sometimes takes some time, but I think that's why we have sponsors. So I don't know, if you don't have one, I would suggest getting one, and talk about that with your sponsor and find someone who maybe has some recovery on both sides of those. You're welcome to call me. I can give you my number afterwards. But I think I don't have a lot of experience with what did I do to change my food. other than I just worked the program. I just jumped in. When I was ready, I think, after being in for a few years and my food, I was really ready to get some abstinence. I just jumped in and worked the program and, you know, worked the meetings and went to and got to know people and just did it all. And I don't struggle with that so much. I still sometimes have smaller meals or I have meals. But one of the things I do is I have some behavioral things that I do, like if I'm at the end of my meal, I knock. I forgot to say this in my share. I knock, and that means my meal's over, and I don't eat anything else after that. So that's for me, just there's some stuff around that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I think. It's just you're in the right place. Just keep on working it. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Who is it?
Did I see him?
Yes. I guess my question is a little similar, and you touched on that a little briefly, but what's your experience with restriction, and how are you able to get out of it?
So restriction caught me off guard because I always had been a compulsive overeater. And when I started and I was like, I wish I were an anorexic, like a lot of compulsive overeaters do. Like we, you know, I just thought, oh, there's a magic in that because then all you have to do is just start, you know, eat. And I didn't realize like the powerlessness over restricting. How I was able to, it's kind of the same answer, yeah. Is I just worked the program. Yeah. And I talked to other people who were also restrictors and got their experience and even sometimes just vented, oh God, I so would love to skip dinner, but I know if I do, that's, you know, that's just not, it's not healthy for me, or it's, for me, it's gonna, you know, my insulin, I'm gonna crash, or whatever, whatever you're, but, yeah, so just, I just work it, yeah.
Corey, can you talk a little about your higher power, and if it has evolved during your abstinence?
Yes, oh, I forgot to talk much about that. So the question is, can I talk a little bit about my higher power, and has it evolved? Yes. So I didn't come in believing in God. I didn't ever want to believe in God. I wasn't raised to believe in God. I thought God was for lazy people who didn't believe in themselves, blah, blah, blah. I started paring back what I heard you all talk about God. That was kind of my first higher power, was trying to sound smart, you know, like you all said. That sounds... And over time, so, and I went to a WANA, I went to a retreat, and we did a WANAD for God. It was years ago at Camp Hess Kramer, if anyone remembers those retreats. And the assignment was, do a WANAD for God. So my wanted one higher power who can manage my food, da-da-da, all these things. And I dutifully took that little sheet home. I stuck it in my file cabinet. And for years, this sheet was my higher power. It wasn't really, but I was like, yeah, I have a higher power. It's in my, it's under H in my, you know, file cabinet. Or something, or G, or G for goddess. At one point in my program, I felt like I was getting more spiritual. I felt like it was just happening to me. I just felt something, a lightness, a something, and I felt like that it started to evolve. And at some point, something, I don't know where I was in my life, but I stopped feeling that connection. And I called my then sponsor, who was so spiritual, and she said to me, I said to her, I can't feel God, and I had it, and I wanted, and she said to me, what's your higher power? Like, how do you define your higher power? And I said, hang on. I went over and got my sheet, G or H or wherever it was, or P, knowing me. Or in the beginning, to be filed, could have been there. And I read it to her. I said, this is my higher, and she said, when did you write this? And I was like, I don't know. I was like 4 years in, and it just felt so right, and it has all the buzzwords on it. And she said, do you think that maybe your concept of God has changed? And I said, oh, I just got chills. I said, maybe. And she said, I want you for a while to stop defining God and just see what happens. And I felt it again, because I was trying to fit my higher power into this little, like, it has to be all of this and none of this, and this is me and this is God, and it shifted for me. And, you know, I don't always feel it, but I know that God is always there. So you're welcome. That's my experience. Thank you.